I'm Mark Simpson, and this is Intersection. Florida's straw poll propelled Herman Cain to the top, but now he's out. Don't worry, Newt Gingrich is surging now in this critical swing state. Connie Mack will run for the U.S. Senate, and could Orlando Mayor Buddy Dyer run for governor? Redistricting maps are out. Governor Rick Scott expected to release his state budget. A lot of stuff to cover. It's our monthly political roundup with 90.7's political commentators Dick Batchelor and Lou Fry. That's ahead on Intersection. And I'm joined by 90.7 political commentator Dick Batchelor, former Democratic State House representative. Welcome.
Great to be back. Thank you.
Are you a former Democrat? Are you seeing the light? Is that what he meant?
He's half right.
Okay.
Just former.
We'll explain that ahead. And that, of course, is Lou Fry, former Republican congressman. Good to have you back.
Delighted. Yes, 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 no, yes.
Okay. Well, that must answer all the questions about Herman Cain, because he obviously is a no now, suspended his campaign amid ongoing allegations of sexual misconduct. Had been propelled ahead, though, by a surprise victory back in the straw poll of Florida. In this critical swing state, though, what happens now to the support that was Cain's? It was very evident, and now it's gone away. Where does it go, Lou Fry?
Well, first thing you got to do is take a little out for Bachman and for Ron Paul. There's going to be some that are going to go that way. I think then the ones that are left will choose between Gingrich and Romney. And my guess is that probably Gingrich will do a little better than Romney in that particular issue. But, you know, you don't know what Newt's going to say tomorrow that he's going to have to explain. I mean, he goes on, and sooner or later it's going to catch you. And it's getting so bad in the Republican side that now Don Trump is thinking getting
He's
in.
Coming back?
Oh, he's talking. He's going to moderate a debate on the 27th of December.
That's right.
They asked me about it, and I said, you know, that's like giving a drunk the keys to the liquor cabinet and having him. Anyway, it's still an open deal.
How are they going to fit Donald Trump and Newt Gingrich's head in the same studio?
They aren't. There's no way.
I was just going to ask about the hair. But anyway, speaking of hair, Mitt Romney been polling steady 25%, has gone down a little bit to 17%. We still see 40% of voters in recent public policy poll favoring Newt Gingrich. What do you think, Dick Batchelor? Could Gingrich be the GOP nominee?
My prayers would be answered.
Yeah,
as a Democrat, my prayers would be answered if he is. I would love to. And he's already ordained himself many things, including Winston Churchill and a host of other people. Look, let me just tell you, cut to the chase. I've said, and Lou and I have done a program before, and I've said, look, Barack Obama will not win this election.
Not even if Gingrich is the opponent?
Let him finish.
The Republicans will lose it.
Yeah.
And they are losing it. I use the term whack-a-mole, but they're in there on the self-flagellation now. Look, the bottom line is the people who are walking away from Herman Cain, if you want to throw your vote away, give it to Ron Paul, give it to Michelle Bachman. They're going to be wasted votes. It's really between Mitt Romney now and Newt Gingrich. And the fact is, as a Democrat, I'll just be very honest with you. I would love to have Newt Gingrich as a nominee. I think he comes with so much baggage. He's taken almost as many different positions as Mitt Romney has, but he doesn't have the organization. The question is, when he get out of Iowa? You need an organization to get out of Iowa. It's a caucus state. So that's going to be a real trial for him.
You and I agree on that, but I've been thinking about it. This is a whole new ballgame, though. I mean, you can create a revolution in 3 days using the social media. And obviously, Newt is a problem. He didn't file in Missouri. He hasn't done some stuff in caucus states and that. But with the new way of campaigning, you know, it may be something we've never seen before. It may be that Newt can do this without an organization and sell books at the same time. I mean, what a good deal this is. Run for president, sell books, not have an organization to worry about, and still lead in the polls as he's leading in Iowa.
Well, we've seen Herman Cain rise and fall. What does that say about Florida's straw poll, Lou? Is that really a predictor, or could it have been if this sexual allegations hadn't come up?
Oh, no, only if the press makes it a predictor. The problem is there's nothing going on, so they take a straw poll, which is absolutely worthless, and make it a big deal, just like in Iowa. I mean, you have so few people out there in a state that doesn't represent this country, that has no minorities in it. And that becomes a big deal. But that's the ball game. That's the way it is. And if you got to do all right in Iowa. If you don't, you really got to come out of New Hampshire strong, or you're out of the race.
My advice is forget the straw poll. You got to go with either sticks or bricks. As we know, those are the better materials to poll with.
I agree. But in straw polls, we can look back at Iowa again. I said, this is how you win. If you had the most barbecue and funnel cakes at the fair, That's how you win, and that's the straw poll. It has nothing to do with reality.
Well, here is the reality, though. Connie Mack, now officially into the U.S. Senate race. He was on the edge. All signs pointed to yes. Finally, he jumped into the ring there. He benefits, of course, from strong name recognition. His father, the former U.S. senator with the same name and considered an icon of the GOP, especially in Florida. So now that it's official, what do you say, Lou Fry, Bill Nelson, is he concerned?
Sure. Bill now has got an opponent that can give him a race. Before, he had four nice people running, but none of them had any traction. None of them were raising any money, and Bill was just very quietly floating along. Now, Connie's got the name. He's going to have the money. The Republicans have decided this race is something that's winnable, and Bill is going to have a heck of a campaign. However, do not write Bill Nelson off. Bill's been there a long time. He's been in the business. He's got a bunch of money that he's raised already. And if the unemployment rate continues to go down, Obama will not be the black cloud on the horizon. He can sort of avoid him, but Obama isn't going to take him down. So I think this is going to be a horse race. And I don't know, you know, right now, who knows? But those are the two who are going to fight it out.
Do you think Dick Batcher, with the likelihood of a MAC attack here on Bill Nelson, are the other candidates going to get out? Is he going to be the...
No. And here's a problem, too, and I think Lou's alluded to it, too, that you've got other four candidates in there, the former Speaker of the House, Hastert. You've got George Lemieux.
I think you mean majority.
Majority leader. George Lemieux, the former United States Senator appointed by Governor Crist at the time.
The great Republican, Charlie Crist. Yes,
Charlie
great
Crist.
Republican.
That today, yes, he is. Yeah. And but the fact is you've got them raising money. They've gone to some of the big money people. Now are they going to break away and go with Connie Mack? If they think Connie Mack can win, the answer is yes, they will break away
the
and go with
them
raise money. But the question is, can you raise $20 million? And that's the minimum amount. $20 million is what it's going to take in this race. And his father is well-known. I serve on the bank board with Senator Mack. I'm very, very pleased to call him a friend. But then when you start peeling that onion, there are some issues. For instance, on immigration, Connie Mack has been what I would tend to be a liberal position on things like immigration. So once you start peeling that onion, what would be very interesting, too, most people probably know this, you're listening on this anyway, that he's married to Mary Bono, a congresswoman from California. So that's going to be an interesting campaign from coast to coast. But the fact is it's going to take a minimum of $20 million.
Well, Lou Fry, I want to ask you about a little closer to home here in Central Florida. There have been lots of rumors going around that Orlando Mayor Buddy Dyer will run for governor. Dyer, of course, served 10 years in the Florida Senate before being Orlando's mayor, ran for attorney general, lost to your favorite Charlie Crist.
Good Republican.
At the time, he was a good Republican.
In that race, Buddy Dyer says he's running for mayor again, so why this talk about the gubernatorial candidate?
Because I think he's looked at the race down the line. Scott, who I think is doing a better job now.
Rick Scott,
but is going to be vulnerable. Again, we go back to the economy and where is it going to go, the impact of Obama. And Buddy's done a really good job as mayor, and he will probably get reelected as mayor, and that gives him a strong base. He's sitting in the middle of the I-4 corridor as a moderate Democrat who can reach out either way on it. He will come off that with victory, with a little momentum. And I think right now what he's doing is he's doing and getting a lot of people involved in the process or getting commitments down the line. I don't think there's any question that he's running for governor, and more power to him. You know, I looked at the thing, and if there's a shot to become governor of the state and make a bigger difference than you're making as a mayor, you know, why not? I don't think that's a bad thing to do.
What, though, Dick Batcher, about the possibility of Alex Sink wanting to try again to duke it out with Governor Rick Scott?
My opinion, and it's only my opinion, I don't mean to offend anybody, but I think her time came and it's gone. And I think when you look at Pam Oreo, the former mayor of Tampa, she's a serious candidate. Senator Nan Rich, who's the Senate Minority Leader, is talking about running. But Buddy Dyer would make a good candidate. He was a great senator for 12 years. He ran for attorney general, as you pointed out. He's been a good mayor. And that's the kind of people you want to run for higher office. Now, there are some people, including the former head of the Democratic Party here, who's, you know, bad-mouthing him. He's really taking advantage of the position to run for governor. Well, first of all, that person couldn't organize a two-car political funeral, number one. And number two, it really doesn't matter. If he's mayor and he's done a good job and you have an opportunity for your former mayor to be the governor, hey, to me, that's a no-brainer.
Wait, who are you talking? Are you talking about Karen Thurman?
No. Local. We don't.
More local. Okay.
Yeah, it's that season I'm being nice.
Okay. Well, Lou Fry, do you have any more indicators, though, that this is a solid lead that Buddy Dyer is going to get in this race for governor?
Yeah, I I'd put my 101K, what's left of my 401K, on it. I'd put most of that, what's left, on it. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. And again, looking back, and Dick and I have looked at this thing, what's wrong with wanting to run for a higher office where you can do more? I mean, absolutely. as long as you do your job and fulfill that commitment to the people who elected you and that and can do something else, I think it is. And Dick, you said something which is really true. It is difficult to get good people to get into politics, especially when it gets at a higher level and your whole life is torn apart. You know, I think I did something in kindergarten. I was put in the corner. I remember my mother telling me they probably have that in tape somewhere. I mean, you know,
it was a little cone shaped hat that, that you had to wear.
I thought that was for doing good.
Well, let me ask you also, since we're on the topic of local politics, Governor Rick Scott is interviewing candidates to replace Orange County Commissioner Mildred Fernandez. That seat has been filled in temporarily, but the governor has a choice to make. He's interviewed three Hispanic Republicans, Eric Lasso, Jean Ruiz Sandor, Peter Villavaldi Jr. Are you familiar with any of these candidates? Anybody stand out for you in terms of which way the governor might go?
No, but I think there are two interesting observations here. One of all, if you've observed, the Orange County Commission has been going through a reapportionment. They've decided on the maps, and two of the maps actually reduce the number of Hispanics in two of the districts. And that kind of plays into the governor's hand if he wants to appoint a Hispanic so the Hispanic could run as an incumbent in one of those seats. On the other hand, though, you've got DeBiani, who's been a good county commissioner. He's an independent. And Mayor Teresa Jacobs has come out and said he's a great candidate. He's a great office holder. He's been good as a county commissioner. So now you've got the governor talking to the strongest Republican in Orange County about, I want you to appoint him, versus an opportunity for him to appoint a Hispanic to a seat. So I think you've got a very interesting classic.
But one of the things of this kind of deal is you want to move quick. The worst thing you can do is not move quick and let it get blown up and somebody get else involved in it and everything. You know, you're going to – anytime you appoint somebody, you make that person happy and about 20 other people unhappy, whether it's a judge or whatever. That's just the way it is. So do it and do it quickly. I think the idea politically of appointing a Hispanic makes a lot of sense.
Yep.
Well, you can tell us what you think about it. Who should be in that Orange County seat? You can tell us on the WMFE Facebook and Twitter pages. You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 WMFE-FM, talking today with 90.7's political commentators, Democrat Dick Batchelor and Republican Lou Fry. I'm Mark Simpson. You can also send an email to intersection@WMFE.org. Guys, Dick Batchelor, you talked about this just a moment ago, redistricting maps out, not just at the county level, but also statewide. We just saw these Senate maps and House maps expected to be coming out soon. They show, though, that a number of lawmakers, especially Republican lawmakers, appear to be favored in these districts. And folks like John Micah, he's got his home in Winter Park. He's drawn right out under this plan.
No. You don't have to live in the congressional district you run in. And a lot of people think you do, but Mike hasn't lived in it, I think, on and off in the same thing. But
Webster does not live in this district.
Yeah, so you don't have to do that. You have to live in the state, and you have to be over 30 years of or 25 years of age, I guess. So, but that's it. So whether you're in or not, it's a political matter. It's a political problem. It can be if you don't live in it. And then people say, well, look, you're not representing us. You're not here. That's happened over the years. I've seen that in, I guess, 40 years. I've seen that in a number of campaigns. I've never seen it work.
No. Let me point out another side of this whole thing. People, and particularly the other side, has been writing about who's in whose seat and who may or may not run and what's happening. If you look at it, the Senate version of the congressional seats has Corinne Brown pretty well protected, 49% African
in that very interestingly shaped district.
It goes all the way
about
to Jacksonville. Let me tell you behind the scenes what's happening. In my opinion, they're playing what I call Ouija board reapportionment. The fact is they're trying to force the lawsuit that Corinne Brown has against the Fair Districts
law.
So you got the Fair Districts Amendment 5 and 6 on House, Senate, congressional reapportionment. So you've got the standards you've got to meet there. Then you've got the lawsuit that Corinne Brown has brought to basically preserve that long district. To me, what they've done is they forced the court challenges and the Justice Department challenges. One, either Corinne Brown prevails under the Voting Rights Act, or, you know, the Amendments 5 and 6 of the Constitution prevails. So that's what they've done. They really started a legal argument. So the bottom line is, I don't see any hopes of this being resolved short of going to the state Supreme Court and the federal courts.
And can it get done in time? Because in Florida, I think we begin filing in June. And, you know, who knows what's going to happen. And by the way, that favors the incumbent. If I'm an incumbent and I went through this, I could care less. I'm running in Central Florida. I don't care where the line is and that. That's the base. But yeah. Central and East Florida. So the more you don't have it defined, the less time somebody has to run against you. So it's a great position to be in.
Are these new districts, though, are we able to say, are they actually fair? I mean, they look...
Who knows? Is there ever... Any time you draw a district, it is done with the idea of favoring one person or one party over the other. If I would be shocked if the Republican Party, who's in charge of everything, didn't draw districts that mostly favored them and Corrine Brown and a few other things thrown in. But sure, you want to throw the speaker out if they didn't do it.
And we talked about this very briefly, I think, last time, too, but I want to bring it up again. And that is, you have this approach of what it's conflict reapportionment. One, do you take Corrine Brown's district and make it 49% black and basically guarantee her reelection by putting every black you can find in her district and leaving the other districts white and traditionally Republican? Or do you break it up and diffuse it some? And that's really kind of a historical point that we are now in reapportionment. And then, or do you allow districts to be 25 and 30% influence, minority influence, so more can be elected? So it's a very difficult thing. The city is going through that, and Orange County went through that whole thing.
Well, I want to ask you, what do you think, Dick Batchelor, to these new districts? Obviously, we've just got a few of these proposals out now, but what does that play into former Democratic Congressman Alan Grayson's efforts to get back up on the Hill?
Well, keep in mind, he's already raised $400,000, but he's done it not from people here, but by MoveOn.org and people nationwide. He's raised some money. So he'll have the money. The question, he'll put some money, how much will he put in? The very interesting thing, though, is Val Demings, a former police chief who's running for Congress. Now, she says against Webster, but we really don't know because I know where she lives in the Popka Vineland Road. She may or may not be in that district. But what interesting thing to me is that the DCCC, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, has already sided with Val Demings against Alan Grayson, the former Democratic congressman. So the politics are already very, very interesting. And Val Demings, by the way, has raised almost $300,000, which is a lot of money for a first-term candidate. So it speaks to her strength.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Grayson gets a lot of national press and coverage and so forth, but that doesn't get you the local votes. He became sort of a joke along the line, and now he's trying to get a different image in there. But it's very difficult to do, and my guess is, unless he really puts a lot of money in it and something and tries to buy it, he's not going to get the nomination.
Well, I'm going to shift gears up to Tallahassee with Governor Rick Scott. He's, of course, expected to release his state budget very soon, expected to do it at the Capitol, flanked, of course, by all his staffers. It's a change from last year when the newly elected governor released his state budget in Eustis, surrounded by Tea Party supporters. The state, of course, facing a $2 billion budget shortfall. How will the state budget affect this legislative session? How do you think things are going to be any different, Lou Fry, this year versus the last 4 or 5 years?
Well, I don't think they're going to be a great deal different. It's going to be each year it gets harder and harder to find more income, and especially when you don't increase taxes or don't do anything. The education budget is stretched till it can break. But going back to the premise of your question is, Governor Scott at this point realizes that there is a legislature and realizes that he can't do it alone and he won't look good alone and he needs his party with him. So Dean Cannon and Mike Haridopoulos and that become important figures to him, which shows you you got to give the guy credit. He has learned. I don't think it's going to help with the figures. And the bottom line, no matter where you have the press conference, if you don't have the money and you're cutting, no one's going to be happy.
Let me just tell you what the governor's thinking. I asked him, for instance, Rick Scott has made a big push in terms of expanding transportation infrastructure in the state. Last year, though, the legislature had to raid a transportation trust fund to more than $100 million to make up that budget gap.
Yep.
I asked the governor if this year he would be considering that when we spoke to him just recently.
I don't want to take money out of the transportation trust fund this year. I didn't want to do it last year. It's very important that we continue to fund our infrastructure. If we're going to continue to grow our state, we have to fund our infrastructure. I also want to look at doing private partnerships, public-private partnerships to expand our roads.
So the governor's saying he doesn't want to do that again. What do you think, Dick Batchelor, though? I mean, you got to make up the money somehow. Is there a real juxtaposition there between saying you want to improve infrastructure, but at the same time you're taking money away?
That's the two in my opinion, hypocritical points. First of all, public-private partnerships only work when you have revenues. Public-private partnerships work when you've got a private entity that can issue debt. You cannot issue debt. You cannot sell bonds in this market. You can't get a bond rating in this market. So any hopes to do a public-private partnership, short of a state infrastructure bank, number one, does not work. Number two, infrastructure of this state, the most important infrastructure of this state, if he wants to grow high-paying jobs, is higher education. You've got to fund higher education. When businesses move to Florida, the first thing they will ask you, tell me about K through 12, community college, university system. Can you graduate students who are prepared to come to work for me? The second or third or fourth or maybe the fifth thing they ask is, what about roads and infrastructure? The infrastructure they need to fund for jobs is education.
Lou Fry, I want to ask you a little bit about education, too, in just a moment. We've got one more piece of tape here from Governor Rick Scott. I asked him about Race to the Top. This is federal money that comes down to the states if you follow up with all the requirements there. But the governor has kind of danced around whether or not he'll accept this money, saying he doesn't want any federal strings attached to it. Here's what he had to say on it.
Well, here's what's frustrating. That the money that comes back from the federal government, whether it's for Medicaid or whether it's for something like this Race to the Top, it's our money. I mean, they shouldn't be taking our dollars. It's our income tax dollars. We send it up there, and then they come back and tell us how to spend it. So, you know, Floridians know what Floridians need.
So
that's the old block grant argument, and that's something that we support. I support it in the Congress, and matter of fact, a lot of people in the Congress, both parties support it, where X amount would come back for transportation, but it didn't have all the frills on it that you got to do this or you got to hire this person or do it. It was just money that went to the state without anything being taken out.
Are there really strings to be concerned about?
Well, yeah. Definitely. And a lot of times the strings that are attached makes the projects just really totally unreasonable. And, it, you know, 5 years later, you may have a project. It's a lot cleaner and quicker. And by the way, I think we ran the whole block grant program at that time, which was in the billions of dollars, with something like 100 people.
But, at this moment, when you see a lot of federal money going away, and obviously you want to preserve education as much as possible, with something like—
They have to hold your nose.
Race to the Top. Do you think the governor, is it foolish to say no to it?
I think it's foolish to say no without looking at it. What are the deals? What is it they want you to do? Something you can live with. I mean, can we do it for a year instead of taking a long program? Can we say, okay, we'll do it this year, but by next year the revenues will come back? No, you can't say no out of hand right now where the problems in this state. At least look at the bloody thing and make your mind up, but do it on some facts.
Dick Batchelor, what do you think?
The legislature last year with the governor's leadership reduced the per student funding for K through 12 by over $500 per student, and they're going to do it again this year. We keep talking about the good game, the children are our future, education is important, but they act a different way. They're cutting the funding. How can you not accept federal dollars? At the same time, you've got the stress on tests and FCAT scores and teachers testing. If you're going to meet that criteria, you've got to have the money. He needs to take the money. He might be just, you know, putting some hyperbole on the side there, but you've got to take the money.
I just mentioned briefly the Fry Institute, which Dick is a member of the board, is having its 10th anniversary this Thursday coming up. And the only reason I mention is that a lot of things are being done in the private sector by nonprofits to take up some of the things that were being done by the state. We prepared a seventh grade curriculum for a test. We prepared questions for teachers from first through 12th grade already over the last 2 years.
So you're saying there are ways to do it.
Yes,
there are ways to do it.
You know, business as usual isn't working.
Lou Fry, you kind of touched on this matter of House Speaker Dean Cannon from Central Florida, also Senate President Mike Haradopoulos from Central Florida. How successful have those leaders been in bringing home good stuff for this region, this district?
Well, I've been closer to what Dean Cannon's done, and I think he's been a very exceptional leader. I think he's a couple of times, I obviously don't agree with everything he's done, but I think he's done a good job. He's shown some real leadership. There have been roadblocks, but he seems to work around them. And I'll tell you, one of the things I think he's done is he's educated the governor. I think he primarily was the one who worked with Scott and got Scott to believe that the legislature counts. And Mike certainly was a help, but I think Dean led the fight.
You know, we're talking about this because the legislative session starts in January mm-hmm. this year, which is different. Usually starts back in March. Dick Batchelor, what do you think in terms of the performance of Mike Haradopoulos and Dean Cannon for Central Florida? Has that leadership position paid off for this area?
Well, to the degree that Dean Cannon, as Speaker, took the leadership and secured funding for a number of projects, including over $30 million for the University of Central Florida, but the governor vetoed that money. So I think Lou's point is well made. Hopefully the governor has begun to listen and understand there is a House and a Senate and he needs to deal with them. And before you start vetoing $30 million University of Central Florida funding, you should probably talk to the Speaker of the House. So hopefully he has learned. It would be very interesting to see how his budget unfolds.
You know, we talked to the governor, too, about casinos and whether or not he would accept revenues from casinos that might be expanded in South Florida. There's a possibility that three Las Vegas-style casinos are proposed for South Florida. Now we're hearing there might be a chance of a referendum for those voters down in that area. How would a referendum influence the outcome of this debate, Lou?
When I ran for governor, that's what the people from Miami and the casino people came to me. They said they didn't want it guaranteed. They just wanted a referendum down there to do it. My problem was is I didn't think no matter how you get it, it's good for the state. This state's based on family tourism. A lot of our money, a lot of our income in that is based on that. And once you get three casinos, you'll have more. I don't want to be the Las Vegas of the Southeast. I don't. I know there's good people in it, but there's a lot of bad stuff that comes in with it. And, you know, it was frankly tempting because I was doing well in the race, but I was running against a multimillionaire, you know, and here was some.
So you were running against the 1%.
Yeah, that's right. Here was, you know, and they weren't asking me to do anything that was illegal or something. They just said and argued that the people have a right to make that decision, and you shouldn't be making that decision up in Tallahassee. I think there are times that you have a responsibility as a legislator of that to do what you believe.
But that money is surely tempting to lawmakers who are looking at a big budget shortfall, $2 billion potentially here. Dick Pastor, what do you think a referendum would mean? And, of course, that could violate the deal with the Seminole Indians.
It does violate the compact agreement they have with the Seminole Indians for 20 years. Number one, they've got a problem there, and Barry Richard, their lawyer, will fight it tooth and nail all the way to the court and tie it up, number one. Number two, and I agree with Lou, we do not need casinos either in Central Florida or South Florida. And the fact is that they start moving legislation, if it starts passing, to creating an opportunity for casinos in South Florida, then what happens to the hoteliers in this town that also have conventions say, no, we want one here too. If you've got one, we want one. I think they're going down a very, very slippery slope. Unfortunately, we need the money. There are times to rise above. Principle in politics, they usually involve shortcoming of funds. That's what they're doing. If it were not for the shortcoming of funds, they wouldn't be looking at it, and they need not to be railroaded into this mess.
And just real quick, guys, last thought. Lou Fry, what's your story of 2011? What closes out the year is the biggest story for you here in Florida?
Economy. Jobs. There's so many people that you, all of us know, that have been looking for jobs that are out and want to work, decent people, and the focus has not been enough on it by either party. I think we've got to next year just make that the number one priority.
And real briefly, your top story for the new year?
For the new year, Obama.
Obama, and see what happens. Dick Batzer, your top story of 2011, and what's up for 2012?
I would have to agree with Lou Fry. I think jobs, jobs, jobs. We have a lot of friends who have been employed for many, many years, unemployed for the first time, and they'd work. So that would be number one. And number two, I would also support Lou Fry's nomination for Barack Obama to be our next president. I think that's what he said.
Well, you know, it's Christmas time coming, and I feel happy. Everything's good, and, you know, give Dick a break.
Well, that's Dick Batchelor, former Democratic state representative, now with the Dick Batchelor Management Group. And, of course, Lou Fry, former Republican congressman, attorney at Lowndes, Drostic, Doster, Kanner, and Reed. Guys, great to have you both, and happy holidays to
happy
you.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, Happy Hanukkah, whatever.
The conversation about what's happening in Florida continues online at the Florida Talks blog. Visit WMFE.org/intersection to find out more. There you can also sign up for our weekly podcast. Support for Intersection comes from our listeners, and Amy Green is the assistant producer. I'm Mark Simpson. Thank you for listening.